Welcome to Catalysts in Conversation, presented by the National Association of School Psychologists. I'm NAS President Peter Faustino. As NAS President, I have the incredible opportunity to meet and engage with thought leaders, innovators, and advocates who are making a difference every day on the issues facing our communities. These conversations have been so inspiring that I wanted to ensure every NAS member got a chance to listen in and be part of them. And one thing I've taken away from each of these interactions has been the powerful role that school psychologists can play in addressing the challenges that children face in their lives. My hope with this podcast is to empower NAS members and all school psychologists with the knowledge and motivation to be part of these efforts. In our very first episode, I'm so excited to speak with Lakeisha Steele, the Vice President of Policy at CASEL, the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning. Lakeisha has an amazing resume, including 8 years serving on Capitol Hill in the Senate and House of Representatives, notably serving as Senior Education Policy Advisor. She's also worked in the Department of Education and is an outstanding champion for children and youth. Lakeisha, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
I feel like lots of people know the name CASEL. You've got great branding, but could you tell our audience a little bit more about the great work happening at CASEL, your role in the organization, and maybe what ways does CASEL partner with NASP?
Absolutely. This is such a great question, and thank you so much for the opportunity to have this conversation and to talk about CASEL. And so CASEL is actually celebrating its 30-year anniversary this year. So since 1994, CASEL, the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, we have really worked to enhance children's education experiences and their outcomes through evidence-based social emotional learning. We convene networks, our state and district networks. We inform policy. My job as a vice president of policy is really to lead and drive our state and federal strategy to advance social emotional learning as an integral part of high quality education. We also have amazing practice experts that guide practice and the implementation of social emotional learning in our schools. And we have an amazing research team that continues to drive research and, really getting us to think about the gaps in the research and those areas in which need further study so that we can continue to support students' social and emotional learning and development.
Oh, it's great. There's a lot of good stuff coming from CASEL for sure. So I wanted to talk about maybe the elephant in the room, which is that many states and school psychologists in parts of our country can't even say your name. They can't even say social emotional learning. How do we navigate that? Are there things that we can do?
Absolutely. And this is such a it's such an important question because I think that it really strikes at the heart of what all parents want and quite frankly, the majority of what Americans want, which is a stronger public education system, is to make sure that their children are safe and that they are in places where they feel welcome. And where they can learn, and so that they can succeed in school and life. And so I really think a lot of this tension, and I'm someone who comes from politics and policy. And so when you work at the heart, at the intersection of politics and policy, you don't necessarily run away from fights. My old boss, Congressman Bobby Scott, would say, we don't start fights, but we don't run away from them either. So you really lean into the opportunity to have a conversation about an important subject matter that is so integral to human development. And I think a lot of the tension started, of course, during COVID. And I don't want to dismiss parent concerns because parents had certainly valid concerns about the reopening of schools, the type of supports that their children needed to be successful. They have been home with their kids and having to actually be their teachers and work all at the same time. And so, in the midst of that, conversations around masking and mask mandates and COVID ma mandates, then the rise of this, this culture war, which this is not our country's first time having a culture war, but in our current one, there became questions about critical race theory. Was critical race theory in our schools? What's happened? This term social emotional learning. What exactly is this term social emotional learning? And so there are groups who actually are mischaracterizing and putting out misinformation about social emotional learning. At the heart of what social emotional learning is, it is a process to teach children important lifelong skills to succeed in school and in life. I mean, think about it. I made a responsible decision to actually take part in this discussion with you this morning, right? I have to have a level of self-awareness and situational awareness that I'm bringing into this podcast to engage with you in this important conversation. In dealing with the tensions around this issue, I have to be able to problem solve. It's also an important skill that I learned throughout my career, but that you harness because for those that think that you could just make CL go away, you can't because it's so integral to cognitive development. The same areas of the brain in which you learn to comprehend are the same areas of the brain in which children learn facial expressions and how to understand someone's emotions, how to develop empathy, how to perspective take. So all of these lifelong skills, I don't know a single parent. I'm a parent. These are all things that I want for my child. And so at the heart of it, what you have to do is get rid of all of the jargon, right? It might be a term that may have become politicized because of the areas, particular areas where people live, and because of the way in which massive disinformation works, they may have come to an understanding of what SEL is that is far from what it actually is. So I think what we have done at Castle was create a Leading with SEL coalition and put out more resources to really share what it is and what it actually looks like in our schools. And we found that when you actually do that, it actually helps people understand what it is and parents support it. That's overwhelmingly what the data shows is that 90% of our parents support it. 84% of teachers think that it's really important to student learning. And so I think it's an opportunity to really lean into the evidence-based practice, the 30 years, the decades of research that demonstrate how social emotional learning supports students' academic achievement. It helps them feel more safe in schools. It helps improve school climate. It's actually really important for our teacher well-being and for them to model these skills so that they're able to develop caring relationships with students. And then in turn, that creates these safe and supportive learning environments where children actually, it creates the conditions for them to learn and soar and have, and for teachers to have high expectations for our kids.
Lakeisha, so much good information in just one response. I mean, I can't agree more that it just feels like the words have been co-opted, right? And when you start to talk about what it really is, I feel like there's so much common ground around this. I know a school psychologist who said, I can't use the word social emotional learning, but if I say well-being, everybody wants in on the work that we're doing. You gave some great examples. Are there other stories of success where we're sort of getting this right?
Absolutely. And can I even just share that we should be making it easy for our school psychologists to do their jobs, right? Like I often wonder, do parents, does the community at large, do like we understand when we talk about school psychologists, how important this role is to deciding, making really important decisions around effective and evidence-based practices to support student learning, student behavior, student social skills. And so when there is the polarization around this term, it makes it very difficult for school psychologists to access evidence-based programs and resources to do their jobs. So I just want to, so before getting to the good
Oh,
examples,
thank
because
you.
there's many and I will share that, but I do want to make sure that I share the consequences of what is actually happening. We're in a post-COVID area, time. And we still, even most recently, the Department of Education has been doing pulse surveys since COVID. And the most recent survey, school officials still say that the lingering effects of COVID, overwhelming, I think it's like about 85, 95%. Well, I'll send you the data in case I'm misquoting it. But they say that the lingering effects of COVID have affected students' social and emotional development. So that means that we need to ensure that we have those resources and the investments so that our school psychologists can do their jobs. And
And
so I
teaching.
think that we have to, so in the, as we're leaning in here, right, like through the, to this controversy, dispelling the myths around SEL, but also talking about consequences and also what it means for school psychologists and in turn, what that means for our students. I think that there are just absolutely incredible examples of leaders leading on this issue. And Chicago Public Schools, they have implemented this year, implementing social emotional, actually this whole school safety model that's district wide that includes social emotional learning. And since they have implemented social emotional learning, they have seen graduation rates increase. The University of Chicago has done studies around the implementation of social emotional learning, and they have found that it's connected to school climate and also school discipline and suspensions, where it's reduced the number of arrests and expulsions, and it's increased safety in Chicago public schools. And so it's absolutely amazing when you see the role of social emotional learning operating in this way. I'm trying to think of, oh my goodness, there's so many amazing examples of work happening in Maine. They just created a literacy program. Within the literacy program, there's elements of social emotional learning, which this is something that's close to my heart because we have an SEL and literacy initiative, and it's an opportunity to talk about the role of social emotional learning and cognition, and how you can't separate them if you want to. There's this researcher, Dr. Mary Helen Immordino Yang, who's an amazing neuroscientist, and she has really educated, and I think it's now lifting into national consciousness about how thinking and feeling are opposite sides of the same coin. And so, as we're thinking about all of the foundational skills that children so learn in order to become a really good reader, that paying attention to their social emotional development, how critical that is too. And we see that in Boston public schools. I think that even in the midst of the controversy, that there's some really great work that's happening. I would also say it also is connected to I think legislation. So I was one of the lead drafters and negotiators of the American Rescue Plan Act for the House for then Chairman Bobby Scott. And when we drafted the American Rescue Plan Act, it was listed, it was certainly not made in a vacuum. It was listening to all of the groups, right? NAS, the school psychologists, the teachers, parents, sharing what was most important about the investment and where they wanted it to go, and meeting students' academic, social, emotional, mental health needs was so important. And so that legislation was drafted based on data and reports from groups. And so I think states and districts have leveraged these resources to figure out academic recovery and the role of social emotional learning and supporting that. You see it in state ESSA plans, which I think is really exciting as they think about what school improvement should look like and how they think about school culture and particularly creating positive and supportive school climate.
I feel like any school psychologist who's listening to this podcast is clapping, screaming out loud, saying yes in their offices or in their car ride. I know I shared this with you a couple times, but I had the pleasure of listening to you speak at our Public Policy Institute this summer, and I feel like there were moments where you just got into the zone talking about the work that you and Castle do that just inspired me. I mean, it really got me feeling like if the world was run or directed by Lakeisha Steele, children would just be happy and healthy. We'd really be in good hands.
Oh, Peter, thank you so much for saying that. You have no idea,
Yeah.
what that means. And I think what I view being here at Castle as an extension of why I wanted to go into public policy in the first place. I was born to a mother who was born in the Jim Crow South, and her own education was interrupted because of massive resistance, to school integration. And she was one of 13. She became a single mom, moved me and all of my brothers and sisters. I'm one of nine to Illinois. And she was a woman who was very strong-willed and really taught me the importance of education as being that great equalizer, and that she didn't want the barriers because of systemic inequity to impact my education. And I think about that all the time and think about my role in having had an extraordinary life and opportunities that I never could have imagined growing up in Kankakee, Illinois, but how serendipity just happened. And the opportunity to work in Congress and in the Department of Education, and the sense of duty and obligation that you have to children to ensure that their education is not left to chance. We often talk about, your zip code, your neighborhood shouldn't determine, right, your opportunity. But that requires, right, like the policies behind that to ensure, the success of our children. So being here is very much just connected to ensuring that all children are able to get the education that they deserve, which, is guaranteed by state constitutions. And so I think it's I think these conversations and wrestling with them are so important, because it really is about like what is owed really to our children to ensure, their success.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I think it sounds like we're indebted to your mom more than anything else for putting you on this path and then creating this ripple effect that the great work that you do that we will benefit from. Something you said, I mean, not sure if you heard there's an election coming up next month, right? As policy director, you've referenced some of the work that you've done. How important is advocacy and engagement for school psychologists?
I think school psychologists, when I think about really the how our education system, and we certainly need, there's so many areas to continue to strengthen public education, but we certainly would not have the investments that we have today without our school psychologist. Even now, I think about in New Hampshire, a bill that was being considered to ban social emotional learning. And the public comment, there was like over 4,000 comments against the bill, who showed up to actually testify in front of local state legislators. Many of them were school psychologists. And they talked so simply, it was so beautifully, about what social emotional learning is and how critical it is to students. And so I would say, going into this election is to remember that creating the society that we all want to live in, and how schools are a microcosm of our society, that that's always on the ballot. It's always on the ballot. And to think about showing up, and not just with our votes, but when there is legislation that's being considered in the state legislature. When your school boards are determining your budgets and how they're going to spend those dollars, when your state Department of Education is determining your strategy, the strategic plan for education, that you actually show up to take part in that education. And this is why SEL is so important, because what you're doing, you're activating your agency. You're activating all of those core competencies and showing up and making your voice heard about why strengthening public education is important. And certainly social emotional learning is a critical part of that. And I think that school psychologists like continue to lead the way. So I would encourage folks, if you have a school psychologist in your life, I think you should just follow, if they say, hey, it's time and we're rolling, I think you just should just get in line. Because I do think that school psychologists are closest to all of the issues, or closest to the problems and the challenges, and what is best for kids. And I think that we should listen. And so I think it's really, really, really important to make sure when those decisions are made that their voices are in the room, and also that we just again never forget that strengthening our public education system, right? How we fund education in this country, we still haven't gotten that right. Local property tax dollars, which creates so much inequity. And so the role of the federal government, 8% of dollars is contributed to K-12 education. And so with the end of the American Rescue Plan Act, it shouldn't just be an asterisk. It shouldn't just be like, oh, it was this historic investment. It should be a conversation about how this should be the new normal, and pointing to all of those amazing bright spots. Or states and district leaders who are on the front lines, our school psychologists listening to them about how important these dollars were and how that's translated into transforming learning environments to better support students. And so never forget how to leverage these critical pieces of legislation, whether it be state, whether it be federal, whether it be school board decisions, to make sure it's working for our families, working for our kids, and that just doesn't happen without raising your voices.
Oh my gosh, it's so energizing to hear people outside the profession sort of like recognize the value of school psychology, the idea that they are on the front lines. Because I do think sometimes school psychologists forget, right? They're just in the trenches doing this work, but their voice can be really loud when they are acting and engaging locally. You named all the groups, right? The school boards, the administrators, the parent groups, local legislators. It's not just about, this big election coming up. It's the day-to-day kind of advocacy work that we all have to engage in on behalf of public education and children. I feel like there's so many resources that school psychologists access through CASEL. Are there any ways that we can support the work you're doing? I mean, you described it in the sense of like talking about it, right? Highlighting the good work that gets done. But are there other ways we can support what CASEL is doing and social emotional learning more broadly?
Well, I think what's amazing is that your organization, NASP, I think really has led the evolution of how we understand the role of school psychologists and those gaps, right, in our infrastructure and our education system. And I think when we saw Congress pass the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act for the first time, we had these mental health demonstration grants. This $1 billion additional investment into the Title IV, the Student Support Academic Enrichment Grants Program, that we joined forces with you all. We supported all of your incredible efforts there, working with Congress to make it so. And now, again, we can't stop there. We have to leverage that investment to make sure that Congress invests annually into our school psychologists, into really building our school mental health systems. And so that is an effort that we certainly have joined in and continue to support you all in, because it's so interesting. I think that there is a tendency where there is there's there are there's disinformation that SEL is therapy and SEL is mental health, and it's not, right? SEL, I think school psychologists know this so well. But for the sake of not using jargon, what I'll say is SEL is such a critical part of mental health. And I think that we've joined forces and you all have helped, I think, policymakers, but our country and our national consciousness understand that SEL really creates these protective factors. And what are these protective factors, right? Like to buffer against mental health risk, it is caring relationships, it's safe and supportive environment. So SEL becomes this critical foundation, a tier one support, but I would say foundation in our schools. And so it makes sure that if we really create a strong foundation, I think school psychologists know this so well, if we have a strong foundation to support students' mental health and we really invest in the infrastructure, we actually can address this mental health crisis. I think we've joined forces. We are with you all. Every step of the way, because it's an issue that we cannot allow to become in our rear view. It has to continue to be a part of a forward movement about what is best, for our students, and we can't allow any of the distractions, to stop us from creating additional progress around our mental health in schools.
Yeah, we feel it. We feel the connection with so many groups that recognize the importance of this work. I, as a practitioner for 27 years, and then just this year as NAS president, I can tell you the last couple of years post-COVID, when we had that additional funding and that focus on the work, we really moved from being reactive to student problems to being more proactive. And I think just as you stated, right, we're starting to see the benefit of that, but it can't just be the one-off. It can't be the, oh, that was a thing we did because we had some funds. It's got to be built into the infrastructure exactly
Absolutely.
the way you say, and start to really lean into this work.
Absolutely.
So much of what you said really ties to my presidential theme this year, which is this idea of being a catalyst in action, sort of like focusing on the relationships that we build in schools, sparking and inspiring change, but really that part about being in action. So you've said a lot of great ways that school psychologists can get involved, but any advice on, like, in their daily work, the day after they listen to this podcast, how can they put some of this in action?
I think that the biggest thing is to not become distracted, right? I think at the heart of any tension, right, like to lean in and to figure out where those areas where we can best move forward and do what is best for children. And school psychologists know this better than anyone. You understand human development better than really anyone. And so I think it's to remember that they know what is best for kids. And because of that, they have to continue to advocate. I really think that when getting these huge wins, like the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, it takes like policy, it's the long game. And the more time you invest into it, the greater the gains for children. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have the ups and downs, right, of the policy making process, some wins, some losses, but those losses are really just another opportunity to just figure out, right, like to recalibrate and figure out, okay, what's our messaging? What's our advocacy strategy this year? What's our ask? Where are these opportunities at the state level, where we could potentially leverage to get Congress's attention, that there is great work happening in places like Massachusetts, that could lead us into our next era, which is where I think the American Rescue Plan brought us around what is best for kids. So I think don't forget all the progress that they've made. It's so easy to become cynical, and jaded, but school psychologists have done an incredible job and have made incredible progress, even if you just look over the past 5 years. And so to allow that to not take the wind out of your sails, to allow it to propel us forward, because there's still so much work to do. And the work is directly connected to serving children. So if we stop showing up, if we stop advocating for what we know is best for kids, then we are risking the future of of a generations of children. So we owe them too much. I think again, going back to this debt owed to our children and the importance of public education as a public good. So we and to really identify with that mission and what it means. And so I think we just got to keep it. No matter what happens in November, we have to continue to show up to strengthen public education and do what's best for our children.
It's one of the reasons I love being a school psychologist. But as you stated, you sort of hinted at, right? I mean, this work is hard and it's a long game, right? Your work is hard, the advocacy work you do at Castle. Part of the conversation we're having in our profession is around burnout, right? And prevention of burnout. So maybe on a more personal, professional level, what brings you joy and how do you find balance to make sure that this hard work doesn't drag you down?
Oh my goodness, I love this question. I love this question. I absolutely find so much joy in my 2-year-old daughter, whose name is Ari, and she made me a mommy. And my husband and my family. And so being in, we talk about environment, safe and supportive environments for kids. But also, right, like when you have a family and a support system, when you feel loved, I feel like there's absolutely nothing I can't do. And when I look at her every day, the amount of joy that she brings me, there is absolutely nothing that I cannot conquer. And I just feel so excited about the future because she's already telling me she's going to be the president.
I think
Which
she's going
I
to
didn't give her, I didn't give her that idea, by the way. But it's really exciting. She gives me so much joy. And we've developed an affinity. We love agritainment. So we go to our local farms and we go on hay rides. It's a lot of fun. We're looking forward to Halloween, but I absolutely just love being with my family. And of course, and I also love reading. I'm an avid reader whenever I can.
Yeah.
But
When you're
those
not
are just
reading
some
for
of
work, when you're
the
not reading policy briefs.
when I'm not reading for work, but but no, I just really just try to pour into my family.
I love that answer. I'm sort of grinning from ear to ear and just feeling, I think a connection around my own daughters, my own family. So,
Was gonna say, what brings you joy?
cooking.
That's not my interview. Sorry.
No, quite cooking. I love to cook. I think it's my upbringing with my mom in particular. I think she wanted daughters and she got three sons, and so she required us to be in the kitchen learning to cook and help her out, and it was the greatest gift she could have given me. And so even if I've had a really long day, if I am chopping something, frying something up, I hear that sizzle, probably a glass of wine that goes along with it, then everything sort of comes back into focus and balance, and especially when I'm with my family in the kitchen or my daughters. So,
Okay,
yeah.
I'm definitely coming over. I hope this means
You got it. The next time you are in New York, I
a
will cook you a meal. You've got it. That's a promise. And everybody listening heard that. Although I might have to invite the listeners as well, and that could be a little bit of a
it's a
challenge.
party.
Yeah. Well, Lakeisha, I honestly could speak to you all day, and I'm so appreciative for your time. I know you're super busy, doing a lot of really important work, but I appreciate everything that you said about school psychologists and the profession. I want to thank you again for this incredible conversation around both the challenges and opportunities surrounding this fight for social emotional learning. And I hope that school psychologists listening to this conversation are going to come away with a sense of empowerment and a desire to get involved in this work even more so than they're doing already. That way, we can take this conversation and put it into action. So we're going to be back with another episode of Catalysts and Conversation soon. Until then, I'm Peter Faustino. I want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to Lakeisha Steele.
Thank you so much.